you need a lot of time, commitment, and deep expertise on how to optimize a short-term rental property. And knowing that we have that skill set, you can always make money in this space. Long story short, we made the decision to quit our jobs before we even launched our first property.
We're here to empower high-income earners to gain back control of your time through financial independence and stop trading your time for money and start letting your money work harder for you.
And hey, if you want to meet other high-income earners on their FIRE journey, join our High-Income Earners FIRE Facebook group. Every month, we'll have guest speakers and we'll share about what our team is currently working on and allow you to share what you are working on with other high-income earners. High-Income Earners FIRE podcast is brought to you today by Bonavest Capital, where we partner with investors to build up passive income through real estate syndications and start living a lifestyle by design.
As well as Say Yes Stock Option Investing, where we show high-income earners how to generate consistent cash flow with your phone and accelerate your journey to financial freedom. Welcome back to High Income Earners FIRE Podcast. I am your host, Cody Yeh. Again, today it's just two of us. It's myself and Charles Crampton. Unfortunately, our co-host Aline Prag is doing better stuff. Her full-time work, she got sent back to her job. But again, I promise, and she promised that she'll come back as a special guest sometime in the future. With that being said, today we have a very interesting guest, Charles Cramper. Sorry, Crampton. I tend to butcher people's name. We have a series of short-term rental grew or established. We're just very new, like only a few years in the business, but they have achieved a lot, right? Crampton has built a business from ground up to a seven-figure business in the last 12 months. And he himself and his wife quit their job exactly a year ago. And he's around 35 years old with two kids. And before that, he was actually a CFP, Certified Financial Planner, and a Certified Portfolio Manager before he quit his job. So it will be really interesting talk to merge, and he will talk about how he actually built his wealth through real estate early on in the days and how he leveraged his stock portfolio. So without further ado, let's welcome Crampton.
Awesome. Thanks, Cody. Yeah, Charles Crampton here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So do you prefer Charles or prefer Crampton?
Yeah, Charles is great.
Charles. Okay. So Charles, like, can you give us a quick rundown of your investment journey?
Yeah, sure. So for the first 10, 12 years out of school, I went to school for finance. Building wealth was always a priority for me. I just saw it as an opportunity to, you know, whatever we're pursuing in life, I just knew having wealth would provide more time and resources. So it's always been a focus of mine and for my wife and I. And so we invested passively in real estate for most of that 10, 12 years. And we certainly aggressively invested into stock portfolios. That's my background of expertise. And so, you know, quality portfolios, diversified, held for the long term, but leveraged in margin accounts and otherwise. And so that was our focus. We lived beneath our means. We invested everything else into real estate and to stocks. And so come last year, we were 34 in the summer, and we feel like we just kind of lost that sense of purpose a little bit, that money was no longer a priority. We had established ourselves. We had some wealth. We had some money in the bank account. And now we just kind of, it felt like our goals were on autopilot. If that makes sense, just didn't have the same fuel anymore. We had a beautiful home, we have a beautiful family, we have money in the account. I felt a little bit bored. And so started talking to friends and family about it, my wife, of course, and really I started looking for the next thing. And I thought more and more that it was going to be leaving my job. Loved my job, a high income job with great people. We did great things. Just I needed something new, something fresh to get me excited again. So I just went looking to figure out what that might be. Thought I might be a full-time stock investor at that point, stock and real estate. And then someone suggested I listen to a podcast, the Andrew Hines podcast, and I listened to Aaron Bay, who had started a Airbnb arbitrage business. It was the first time I had heard about this concept, listening to his podcast. And he had done it here in Southern Ontario, where we live. Yeah. And he was very successful. And he was now 2 years. So after I heard the podcast, it was from like a year and a half ago, but then I found out where he was today, and he had accomplished so much and had so much success with it. And anyway,
he was actually on our podcast too. So,
oh, there you go.
It's actually, let me see how many episodes. So the last one we just dropped is Hamza, is another one.
Yes.
Based in US and Southern Ontario. And then Aaron Bay's on December 13th, episode 32, if anyone want to refer back to it. Yeah, here you go. Keep going.
Both Aaron and Hamza have accomplished incredible success in this space. They started much before us, but they were the trailblazers, certainly in Canada for sure, with this business model. And listening to his podcast, by the end of it, I knew that's what I was going to do. Like, it was that clear to me that I can do this, and I felt pretty confident. And so I listened to it a couple more times, and then I started doing the due diligence. So I spent the next 6 weeks or so getting up way before my job started at like 4 o'clock, just kind of doing the due diligence of, is this business viable? How would it work? How would I build teams? How would I scale? And will this work? And I guess after those 6 weeks, long story short, we made the decision to quit our jobs before we even launched our first property, to be clear. We quit, both of us. My wife and I worked at the same company. We both quit.
Oh, you guys work for the same company? Full-time. Do you guys own that company? Yeah, we both worked for
Edward Jones. No. Okay. A big corporate investment firm, Edward Jones. We started there after school. Yeah. We started there after school. We met each other there. We got married and had kids. And then, frankly, it was time to quit and go all in on this business. So that's a long story short.
So I know we're definitely going to dive into the Airbnb arbitrage, but we don't have a lot. Most real estate investors never touch stocks. Meanwhile, a lot of people know that I teach about stock option. I was a guest speaker for TD Direct Investing. And you are a certified financial planner. My fiance, Claude, has also worked for RBC in that same realm as well. So I want to ask you is, when you say you started out by investing in real estate and then a leveraged portfolio, margin account, all that, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So many people are more comfortable investing in real estate, right? It's, you know, it's there, it's tangible. They just feel more. So even when you're not an experienced investor, people are confident investing in real estate, even though it comes with typically at least an 85% leverage, right? You're borrowing 80% when you go and buy the asset, which comes with a lot of inherent risk, but people don't necessarily see it that way. And so with stocks, everyone is scared of stocks, but of course, that's my background. I understood it really well. And so to me, leveraging a quality diversified stock portfolio wasn't any more risky than leveraged real estate. And in many ways, for me, I felt it was less risky. You need to have the right checks and balances in place. You need to really manage your cash flow well, have safety nets. But once that stuff is in place and you follow a disciplined process for investing into quality stocks, leverage means borrowing. So in a margin account, you know, if I had $200,000 sitting in that account, I was also borrowing typically $400,000 at the same time. So instead of investing only $200,000, I had invested $600,000. And of course, those compounded returns of constantly being leveraged over years, frankly, it had a much bigger impact on the wealth than the real estate.
So because typical blue chip in Canada, I know there's a lot of listeners from US, you can leverage up to 5 times. But in Canada, the broker that we use, Interactive Broker, they only allow you to leverage up to 3.33 times for your margin usage. So when you say you leverage double, do you have blue chip stock or are you playing with different, what kind of strategy were you using?
Yeah, no, I didn't. That's where I didn't take the risk. My risks always came from smart leverage, being really disciplined with living beneath our means, adding to our investments constantly and borrowing on top. But I knew if I was going to go with the leveraged approach, that the quality of the investment needed to be much higher. And so, yeah, it was all about diversification of blue chip stocks. And so all 11 sectors, strong, big companies in each sector, diversified by geography and other asset classes. So the portfolio was large. And when you have a large, diversified, quality portfolio built for the long term, it was buy and hold on just about everything. I rarely sold unless I saw a major red flag in the industry or for the company. So it's just constantly adding to the portfolio and constantly leveraging.
And then when you leverage, do you take those blue chip stocks, full basket of it, and then go to Edward Jones or go to another bank and say, hey, how much are you willing to give me more to invest? Is that what you do?
I didn't necessarily take it anywhere. For the most part, Scotia iTrade, all these blue chip stocks, you can have a margin of up to 70%, meaning only 30% needed to be owned by you. There's 70% could be loaned. And that's what I did. And my biggest strategy, I would say, is I would increase the amount of leverage depending on what the market was doing, right? That's the only, call it, time of the market, which it isn't really. It's essentially, if the market fell by 10%, I would have a process in place where I was borrowing X amount percentage-wise. If it came 20% from its peak, I would borrow that much more. And the more the markets dropped, the more I added to the leverage. And frankly, I had nets beneath. So once I was maxed out on the margin side, so once the margin account, the bank said, hey, you can't borrow any more than this, I'm maxed out. This happened during COVID. During the COVID crash, I fully leveraged the margin up to every dollar I could. And then I accessed my other credit that I had available. So now, because I invested in real estate as well, I had lines of credit, home equity lines of credit. So I had lots of other access to significant sums of credit. And I added that too during that. So once the markets had pulled down at their deepest at 35%, I refinanced our properties. I invested in the margin again to top it up even more. And so, I mean, I must have been leveraged like in total on my portfolio, I probably only owned 15 or 20% of what was invested. The rest was fully leveraged. Mm-hmm. And of course, the markets did good things for the next couple of years. And good timing because I sold most of it right before we quit our jobs to start this business.
Wow. The timing just perfect. Hey? But if he did not sell all of those, and I know like there's different ways. I don't like people using margin. I don't teach that. I never teach people using margin. As a matter of fact, my send down strategy, we only use 44% off the margin requirement. As in, if I have $100, I only use 44, right? So we're hitting 1.5 to 4.5% per month. Now, I know you have a different strategy for that. I promise we'll get into the short-term rental. I just want to drill your brain because you're a certified financial planner. You're CIM certified as well. You know things that we don't know and the best practice that you've seen a lot, right? So if for people that say they're starting out, they have a stock portfolio, they leverage, but they don't have HELOC from real estate. So if the market do crash, they don't have other money to pull it to fill the hole. Would you still recommend that?
No. And actually, I want to be really clear on this podcast for people listening. I also do not recommend a margin account for anyone else. I very, very comfortable, not just on managing a stock portfolio and have deep expertise on managing a stock portfolio, but even more importantly is actually managing the downside with managing your cash flow, managing your safety nets. A margin account can be extremely risky if you don't know how to properly support the potential downside impact. It can be devastating. And so unless I know that someone has deep expertise and are extremely disciplined with their safety nets and cash flow, yeah, a margin account is not for most people.
Yeah, just kind of I'll jump in and give it my 2 cents is for any of my students, I say, Cody, we have a big HELOC. Can we pull some of it? I only say use 20% even during COVID because you never know. Some other place of your life might need that money and you don't want to get pinched in other places. Correct. And you're forced to sell at the worst time in your stock market. And I think for the past 1 year, that's what's happening in the stock market. Not necessarily people are fearful because people are pinched in other locations. They're overstretched in other locations. So they're like, where's the closest I can get money? Okay, we don't save. Okay, no cash. Second, do we have line of credit? Okay, I'll use that. Third, let's go sell our stock portfolio, right? I'm not sure if you agree with that.
100%, Cody, in every way. And it sounds like when people hear me over-leveraging a stock portfolio, they think I'm a high-risk investor. And I'm really not. It's more the discipline that goes beneath it, that if you're confident with that, it's not as risky as people sound, but you do need the expertise. But I subscribe to the same model, Cody, that it's the most important thing to investing of any kind, stock market, options, real estate, it doesn't really matter. To me, the most important thing is having extreme discipline to protect the downside. Because if you taking the time to be an active investor, you're going to be wealthy. Like if you're smart, you be patient, you invest, you buy quality investments and you hold them for the long term, you're going to create wealth. The only real risk to creating that wealth and achieving your goals is by mismanaging to the downside. And if you do that, it can be devastating to your life. And so, no, I do not recommend leverage for investing in stocks to anyone. That's simply for me.
Yeah. And before I jump on, I just want to give one example. Correct me if I'm wrong. Let's say if you own Tesla stock, it dropped 80% over the last year. If you were leveraged 3 times and you don't have other money to fill in the hole, what's going to happen is that your Tesla dropped 80% because your leverage, let's say 2 times, whatever, instead of 80%, you will start getting margin calls. So either you sell other stocks to fill in the hole where you have other money to fill in the hole, or otherwise you're forced to sell at the worst time possible, even though in the long term, you think it will come back. Not stock advice, but just because Tesla dropped a lot, right? So as Charles used this method because he knows he has other money and he knows when to cut it and when to start more leverage and all that. So people are listening, don't try this at home. And you don't really need leverage to become wealthy over time. And even Warren Buffett don't use leverage. That just, a lot of time is people think they make more money, but the more important part is how do you preserve capital when the market goes down? How do you be the last one standing and not swimming naked? We all heard about that. So that's that. We're going to jump right into our Airbnb arbitrage side of things. So tell us more about that. You were 12 years financial planner at Edward Jones, and now you guys both quit without any, even the first property. So how do you guys do that? Like, what were you guys thinking?
What were you thinking? We do get, that's probably the most common question, Cody. What
I did the
were
same,
you guys
but
thinking?
I just want to know what you guys are thinking. Yeah. I have properties. I'm like, worst case, I'll sell one property. I survive 4 years. Who cares?
Well, that's just it. I mean, in summary, Cody, that was the answer. And my boss at the time, at Edward Jones, she's my mentor. She's still my mentor. She's incredible. Frankly, she was the one who convinced me to do this. I talked openly with her about what I was thinking. And I just told her about some of my hesitations, and she kind of just challenged me. She said, what's the worst case scenario? That's the question, you know, again, protecting the downside, right, Cody? Like, what's the worst case scenario? Talk me through it. She asked me that question. And so I started to discover, well, geez, I mean, I can invest $200,000 into this business and it can go nowhere. She's like, is that the worst case scenario? You lose a few $100,000 and then what? She's like, then what? What would you do? I said, well, I'll get another job. She's like, yeah, you'll get an even higher paying job. She's like, your resume. And so anyway, she just made it obvious, like, there's no reason to not try something, to get out there and give it your best shot. And she just saw the energy from me that I wanted to do this. And she said, it's time for you to go. So she pushed me out. And
that's very rare. Eh? That's very rare. You have a good boss, because all the boss I had was more focused on their own benefits and definitely want to slave drive me and push every bounce out of it. Don't tell me anything about investing. Try to keep me narrow headed and all that. And for all the people who work for me, I have a team of 8 as well. And I want them to be a happy, healthy human as well, right? And only when we align their goals with our business, and there will be time where they outgrow us. I'm like, hey, if you guys better offer, show it to me. I'll benchmark where I'll let you guys go, right? Like, it's fair. Yeah. It's only fair both sides. And it's great to hear that. Right.
Yeah, you got to find a good mentor. I got lucky that she was my boss, because she has just been a great mentor to help me think and approach things differently. But yeah, I completely, this was not good for her. She had just promoted me into a major role like a month earlier. And frankly, it was like the reason why I quit. Like, it's like, you guys are paying me too much. I'm going to stay here forever. It's now or never.
Can you give us a sneak peek of too much? And which bracket of 6-figure are you? The low, the mid, the quarterly, 3-quarter? Like, what is high 6-figure? Everyone's at 6-figure.
No, call it low to mid. Like, okay. Yeah. That's but still I would lot, say the, right? the next step, it's a pretty flat organization. And so once you kind of jump into that general partner role, I mean, now we're talking more of a 7-figure number. And I believe that was in the short term that was going to be the next step. It's just less about the money. I didn't want to work a day job. I just needed a change of pace for my life. So anyway, that was the reason for going.
So you broke your golden handcuff. That's say 300K, just for the number's sake. I throw it out. 300K T4 job. Okay, you take home half of it, 150. You give away that for this. Now, it's only been 1 year. If you look back, do you make the right decision?
Oh my gosh. In every single way, yes. Financially, the growth, like, I'm a different person today than I was a year ago. I feel like I look back on that person, and I was, even though I was successful in my own right, my mindset was, it feels like a decade old, that I have become a better person, a stronger person, more creative. I just feel like the lid has been lifted on life, not just business and money, but just in so many ways, being free to build your own thing and do your own thing and make your own choices every day. It just does so much for you as a person deep. So yes, in every single way, it was the right decision for me.
Can you keep it real for our audience? For the past 1 year, what was your biggest failure after you quit? What was that one point you doubted, be like, oh my God, I second doubt myself? Any of those moments?
Oh geez, yes, absolutely. Good question. I'll try to keep it brief, but our strategy for growing this business, obviously through 12 months, we have 55 listings and it's well over 7-figure business. Thank you. And so we launched crazy fast. And so to start the business, I did sell, as I mentioned briefly, a big chunk of my leveraged stock portfolio at the beginning of January last year. January 3rd, I sold an obscene
best
amount
time
of
ever.
Stocks. Best timing ever. Bought at the right, and a lot of that was luck. But hey, I sold the portfolio. And we invested about $350,000 fast. I call it in the first 2 months into launching a ton of properties. I think we launched in 21, 22 in the first 3 months.
So, and, sorry, hold on. I got to stop you there. So $350,000 for 21 to 22 listings. So it was about 20K per listing or 15 to 20K?
15, I think is about the right number. There were some other costs involved in the beginning too, like equipment, computers for our company, website, corporate structures. So a lot of that went to a lot of places, but most of it went into the properties themselves. Yes.
And what kind of renovation were you guys doing for from that $15,000 per listing? What were you guys doing?
Yeah, no real renovation. There's the five categories of launching an Airbnb. And so that's furniture, decor, supplies, consumables, and security.
Mm. And furniture, decor, supply, security.
And consumables. Yeah.
Yeah, and consumables. And that's 15K for all of those.
Yeah, about that. And now, of course, there's the first month's rent. And in the beginning, we were almost always paying last month's rent deposit as well. So yeah, 15, 16, 17K total for those five items plus some early rent.
Mm-hmm. So let's come back to your war story. Sorry, I cut you off.
It's good to dive in. I'm glad you asked the question. So 350K, 22 or so properties roughly. And we invested, of course, in arbitrage in the worst time of the year, right? It was January and February. So we knew that we weren't going to make money in those first few months, but that we wanted to launch at that time to make sure that during the money-making season of Airbnb, spring and definitely the summer, we wanted to make sure we were launched. We had a bunch of reviews and that we were ready to make money. You don't want to launch in the summer. You want to launch leading into the summer. Yeah. So it was the right time, but the emotional impact. So at first I was confident, right? Invested the money. It didn't matter. 350K, throw it in there. We were launching properties like crazy. Our partners were working obscene hours to make this happen. I want to go back to them soon after this. But we did all this work. We were up and running. And it was, I think, April. And the numbers at that point, they did not look good.
What was your expectation for occupancy and nightly rate, and what's the reality? Let's go that way. How's that?
It's a little too specific because the nightly rate changes by every property, by time of year. But I would say on the big picture, like on the whole, I think it was the overall revenue that we were seeing in, call it March and April, just it wasn't where we thought it was going to be. Like
how much off?
I would say it was maybe 75 or 80% of what we thought it was going to be.
So you're only up by 20 to 30%. Okay.
Correct. But of course, the margins in this business, they probably are about 30 or 35. And so maybe it might have been more. Maybe we're off by 20, 25%. And all of a sudden I had this panic like, hey, if we're 20% off, call it on the whole, like for the year, if we're 20% wrong about the summer as well, these numbers are going to be, it's going to change the game entirely. It's not like we're going to go out of business right away, but it just was going to change everything about how long it was going to take us to make money here. Anyway, so I had a mini panic attack, like, geez, like, is this going to come to an end before it even begins? But of course, mini panic attack, stay focused, the teams keep moving forward, keep improving our operations and having confidence in the process. And sure enough, May's performance was vastly better than April. Then June was vastly better than May, and it just kept continuing. July, much stronger than June, and even August was better than July. So like we went from kind of an uh-oh feeling to, this is even better than we thought. Our summer numbers came up quite a bit above our anticipation, and that's where you make all the money. So all to say, come the end of August, we knew we had a successful business.
Is it just because of the high season, or what else do you guys do to basically, at first, you guys are 20, 30% off the expectation. You guys are expected to make 30 to 35%. So your spread now is only 5 to 10% now. And what change that you guys implement to make it start May and every month onward become better? What change was that?
Mostly, we won't take the credit for it. It is the season. I don't think we realized how seasonal our properties were actually going to be. So when we did our forecast for a year, let's say, we definitely ran numbers to say that the summer was going to make X amount more than the winter months, but it was more of a spread. So call it, we underestimated how much we were going to make in the summer and we overestimated how much we would make in the off season. And so we were probably at least bang on accurate with our projections. It's just we didn't realize how seasonal it was truly going to be. So we weren't ready to see such rough numbers for February and March. That was the main reason. But then the other, I'd say there's one part natural. So when you first launch your properties, it's just not the same, right? That there's a lag to the performance. You have no reviews, even as a host. I don't even know if we're a super host yet. If we were, anyway, it takes a while to kind of ramp up momentum for your properties and to fix all of the minor issues that come up. In your first few weeks, you're always going to find out what guests want or need that you don't have. So in those first few months of launching your properties, for a number of reasons, it's going to be a little slower. You're going to have to wait for reviews. You're going to have to wait to fix a bunch of issues. You're going to get some lower guest reviews, but then it starts to ramp up. So it was a combination of everything. Come May, our properties had been going for a while. We improved them all, added things that guests were asking for. We got better reviews. And of course, it was just in time to hit the peak season. And so all things kind of came together. And from May till August, we had proven that this was going to be very successful.
So if you guys do it again, relisting those, would you still get ready in January, February, and then launch in March and April? Or how? Yeah, what are some of the things we would do differently?
Definitely, I don't think we would have launched as many at once. And so this is a topic I do want to talk about. I think the strategy is important here. When you're building an active business like this, when it depends on skill set, on client service, which it does, then the benefit of growing quickly does so much for your business. You build a brand, a reputation with people, and you also learn a ton, right? And so we knew by launching 20-something properties in a few months, we were going to lose money on launching that quickly. You can't possibly do that efficiently. We had some properties that we were already paying rent and we didn't have the time to launch them yet. They were sitting empty and we were paying rent. But I knew that, call it spending this money on inefficiency in the first few months, it wasn't just wasting money. We were spending and investing that money into our business, our brand, references, and learning. And the amount we learned in those first few months, having to launch 20-something properties as a bunch of noobs who didn't know what they were doing, the return on investment of that lost money, lost inefficiency, it was the biggest return of our portfolio. And so I would do it again, but probably not quite as many. We could have launched 8 or 9, and that would have been too much. We didn't need to launch 20.
I know. What I call a leaky bucket syndrome, right? It's like a lot of e-commerce business, they launch a lot of apps, get a lot of traffic come in, but their operation, their foundation is not down. They're trying to put fire everywhere. You're doing sales and marketing lagging. When you're doing legal, accounting is lagging. They're just trying to plug in the holes. They don't have enough hands. So you'll probably launch a bit slower, but that's for the right people. A lot of people need that push, right? And you have your partner and you have two other business partner. And I'm glad that worked out. But for a lot of people, that could just make them break them mentally and financial, and they could go bankrupt. And that's where
you're absolutely right. You need to find that right balance, because it was certainly overwhelming and it could have broken us. It worked out, but there's risk in growing that quickly. And I wouldn't advise growing that quickly next time. But at the same token, so I'd say, like, I wouldn't
especially,
advise it.
Here's the thing. Yeah. You were using your own money.
Yes.
So you have one less layer of stress from investor. But if, imagine someone take other people's money and promise that.
No,
we'll
don't do
toast.
That.
You will be toast.
Like, and that was part of the reason, right? That was part of the, we were willing to take that risk or that strategy, because we also, similar to the margin account, right? Going back to that same mindset that I have, my understanding of money and protecting our money and risk, we were willing to take that growth risk for the exact same reasons. That $350,000 was never going to break us. That if the worst case scenario, we lost all of that money, we were perfectly fine. We were going to be okay. Our family's not going to starve. All is going to be well and good. And so it all comes back to the impact of failure. And the impact here was not going to be significant.
Yeah.
And it forced us to press. Now, I want to say, so yes, we wouldn't have launched as quickly, but on the upside, because we took that risk, launching that quickly and the story that we were able to share on the Andrew Hines podcast, which I was back on in, I don't know, April or something like it, a full circle story, right? The Andrew Hines podcast got me going, and then I ended up on the podcast myself. But sharing our story of the company we built, how we built it, focused on clients first. That's how we built this business, not on based on the numbers. It was based on serving clients really well. And then sharing our growth story, it spread like wildfire. So we had to pitch landlords for the first few months, right, with this strategy. We had to sell them on this concept that they weren't familiar with. That's hard work. By April, we've only been in operations for 4 months. And by April, we never went out to find another property proactively ourselves, not one. All business from April onwards has come to us. And of course, we're also able to negotiate better deals in our favor because of our reputation and our brand. And so it's not difficult for us to negotiate because our value is clear. So it worked. The strategy worked.
Who are your, like, I'm sure you get on Andrew Hines' podcast. After our podcast, more people are going to reach out to you. What is your ideal clients? Let's put it that way. Who are kind of the people you want to partner with? I'm assuming, right? They take the property and say, hey, I don't want any long-term tenant. I heard you can make more money. You upkeep the property better because there's more monitoring, more cleaning. Who's your ideal partner?
Yeah. Our ideal client is someone who understands our value. And I would say who understands their role as an investor. So I'll talk about this a bit. So our value is a big one, right? And so instead of going with the traditional tenant, where of course you have to vet these tenants, you have a different tenant in every property, and no matter how good they seem on paper, you are taking the risk that they're going to continue to be the tenant that they say they are. Whether they lose their job, deep recession, will they be able to pay those bills? Will they take care of the property? These are all risks that every real estate investor accepts. We accept this as part of real estate investing. But with this model, with our company, you no longer have to accept those risks with the traditional tenant. So with us, you have someone who is leasing your property, paying you the monthly rent and utilities, but their business depends on keeping your property in pristine condition at all times. Our success depends on that. And it also, we are running a significant profit, of course. We are a profitable business and we're growing quickly. So every investor can have a very high confidence that we will always be able to pay the rent because we're making money from that same property. It's not dependent on a job. It's that property. And we'll always make the same amount or more with a short-term rental business model. So all of a sudden, these risks of a tenant of not paying or not taking care of your property, they're gone. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, these clients are just that. They're our clients. And that's the kind of service they get. If they have a question, they send me a message, they get a response in minutes every single time. And we're proactive. Our communication is on point. We have processes and procedures for everything. Yeah. So our value is there. And so someone who understands that value is, first of all, an ideal client, but someone who understands their role of an investor is acquiring properties, right? Focused on building their portfolio, building their wealth, focusing on the acquisition, knowing that we will take care of everything else. We'll take care of both tenancy and property management for all their properties, allowing them to focus on the bigger picture.
So what does the landlord need to, let's say you come to me, hey, I have a legal duplex, come rent it out for me. Hey, this is the market rent, 2,200 up, 1,800 down. I'll pay the utility. Right. Then what? What do I do? Do I just sit here? What do you want to do? Do you tell me what to renovate or what to, like, do I pay for the furniture? Will you pay for the furniture? Like, who's going through that five categories? Who's doing
that? Yeah. Good question. That's all on us. So I would say our main value proposition for our ideal clients is that we want to deliver peace of mind with real estate investing. So we want to give people their time back. And we want to give them peace of mind, those two things. So that means we try to make this as seamless as possible. So if you have a vacant legal duplex, like you just said, we agree on the rent that makes sense for both parties. At that point, we sign a residential lease and we take care of absolutely everything. It's up to us to do the inspections at the property, design, source the furniture. We pay everything, of course, for those five categories. So furniture, decor, consumable supplies, security. That's all on us to figure out and do. And then we launch our business. The investor doesn't have to be involved at all. Mm-hmm. And from that point, we are just the property manager. So if we identify an issue with the property through one of our inspections, we'll act as a property manager. We'll involve them as much as they like, but we'll coordinate the resolution, get the fix, send them the invoice after, and we keep it clean.
Cool. And then let's say, not that it has happened yet, but let's say if the landlord is a, hey, I think I can do this on my own, or I don't want you guys coming anymore, but you guys already put in the 15K up front. How did that work? Right? Do you guys sign a 1-year contract at least, recuperate some money, or what is your point from that?
Yeah, it's a 2-year lease that we look for to start for that exact reason, that we're going to invest that, call it 15K into the property, and we need the 2 years to make sure that we're making a profit on that investment.
Got it. Okay. Sorry, I asked you a lot of hard questions. I just thought if there's anyone I want to partner with you, they'll probably ask those questions.
Oh, well, this is perfect. Here. Appreciate it. Yes, thank you.
Before we hop into a fire round, what is the profit sharing between yourself, where you're not really profit sharing because you just paid them a long-term rent and call it a day and you don't
have That's to right. With the arbitrage model, yes. That's right. Now, I would say the other model that we have opened up recently and we're going to continue to explore is really joint ventures on high cash flowing properties, right? So our level of expertise in this space is extensive. Of course, it has to be. And so we are able to identify the right markets, the right properties within those markets, the right renovations to outperform other short-term rentals in that space. And then, of course, we know how to manage and optimize. So essentially, we play the active partner role in a joint venture in finding and launching a very cash flow positive short-term rental. And of course, the other passive investor can just join in on the fun.
Got it. That's smart. So I think I kind of prompt through all the questions. Do you have anything else you want to mention to us before I go into the fire round?
Yeah, I never had that opportunity, but I wanted to be clear. We built this business with co-founder partners. And so when we were quitting our jobs at the same time that was about to happen, we found two others who were essentially quitting their jobs to start their own Airbnb business. Long story short, we found each other. So that's Airbnb Simplified. That's their Instagram handle at Airbnb Simplified and Tracy and team there. And we became one company pretty quickly. I don't need to share the details, but essentially we started just working together on the first few, more of like an exclusive partnership is what I think you'd call it, where we did everything together, but then very quickly we realized we're two sides of the same coin. They were going to build out our operations and be the experts on short-term rentals. Me and my wife were going to focus on the business development side with real estate investors. And so we became one company and we are in fact one company today. Shareholder agreement's just getting finished up and then we'll have a little bit of a coming out story on social media with our new company name and stuff. But we could not have done this alone at all. This is very much a co-founder partnership for people.
Good. No, I think it's a good move. You and your wife, with your past experience, focus on business development, client facing, and let Tracy do the operation and fulfillment side of things. So that's smart.
And so anyone, if you don't follow her on Instagram, you should. And you'll probably see, once she has more time on her hands, she'll probably pour on social media. But if there is a short-term rental guru, it's Tracy and her partners. So follow them along. They're very special people.
Yeah. Airbnb Simplify. We'll have a chance for you to plug in how people reach out to you after the fire round. Let's get right into the fire round. First question is, if you become a billionaire with the B tomorrow, what will your day look like?
Probably not very different. I mean, wealth is there to create more opportunity and more freedom. But at the end of the day, you need that purpose. And purpose is driven for me just being my best self and growing. And so I would be building another company for sure, or companies, plural. My wife and I wanted to build a non-for-profit forever. That's going to happen regardless. But I guess if we got the B sooner rather than later, we would put most of our energy into building a non-for-profit business.
Yeah, I'm raising capital for Mount Sinai for endowment for research on mental addiction and drug addiction, all that. So definitely more finance power and more influence you have, the easier for you. So money is just a means to it, right? And you have to take care of yourself first. Because if you're living paycheck to paycheck yourself, you can't take care of anyone else, period. Second question. If you lose everything, I know you literally quit. You put in $350K last year. But let's say, if you lose everything right now, we drop you back that $350K. We top it up to $500,000. You don't have anything else. Your Instagram handle gone. No podcast. Nothing. Just you and your knowledge. What would you do all over again? Took away all your properties, everything. I only dropped you $500,000.
If we had $500,000, I would start again and do it better. I do believe the short-term rental space is just in its infancy and the opportunities are endless. And so I want to be clear with arbitrage. It is very much a business that requires deep expertise. I think people don't fully get it. They think anyone can do it. You can't. You need a lot of time, commitment, and deep expertise on how to optimize a short-term rental property. And knowing that we have that skill set, you can always make money in this space, whether it's arbitrage, managing high-end properties for other people, joint ventures, selling your knowledge, your expertise, proprietary resources. It's endless. Data, once you are an expert in this space and you know how to build a business, I mean, yeah, there's no leaving. The opportunity is endless.
Yeah, this is kind of a side question. I know you guys don't have a coaching program yet, but where do you guys find the most helpful information for the past year?
Well, I guess I'll answer that in two parts. So we do have a mini coaching and mentorship program recently. Yeah, but we'll talk about that. But in terms of going for information, we're just really resourceful. So there's a lot of other gurus in this space and they provide a lot of great content. And so rather than just listening to that free content and saying, oh, that's kind of cool, we're active learners and we are following their content. We will check YouTube videos from others to find out how other people are doing it. And then we see what makes sense for our business.
Got it.
But then on that quick note, yeah, we do have a coaching and mentorship platform. The first is kind of a wholesale. I'll be real quick with it. I think some are 500 people are on our newsletter where we have too many leads that come in. So in short, we are, instead of saying no to these investors who want the arbitrage model, we are saying we can't take this on, but I can connect you to someone who provides a similar service. And we essentially play matchmaker where we secure the deal more or less with the investor on what makes sense for them. And then we find them someone else to provide the same service. And so it's kind of a wholesale program. And then we will layer on our coaching for that arbitrager. So if they're new to the space and they want us to provide our resources and coaching, we'll provide that as a top-up package in that program. We also just started a one-on-one mentorship program. So this is the first time people will be hearing about it. We've only done it for people who have reached out and asked for it, but we do offer a one-on-one mentorship program, 12 weeks of dedicated support to help someone build their business in this space.
Very cool. Very cool. Very cool. If you're a podcast host, who would you want to interview right now?
Oh, geez. Brain is spinning on that one. I think it'd be Aaron Bay. I mean, he's why we started this. He's what got me to quit my job, I guess you could say. And I mean, he's just such a, the way he thinks is just so different from me and from so many others that I wouldn't just pick his brain about arbitrage. Frankly, I'd probably pivot to other business and financial items. I think that guy's just a wealth of knowledge. So there you go, Aaron Bay.
Aaron Bay. Well, people want to listen to Aaron Bay's podcast. Like I said, is episode 32 was released on December 13, 2022. So check that out. That's good to know. Okay. So what are the ways you're giving back right now or planning to give back?
Yeah, good question. So we want to free up our time with knowing that we have that financial freedom. And the next goal is that time freedom where our business is running sustainably. And once that happens, and we don't expect that to be too long from now, we want to start dedicating our time to building a non-for-profit. And essentially, I keep saying it, but long story short, we don't have too many time to go into the details, but the goal is to start with a local not-for-profit here in Burlington that helps the people of Burlington. We have a lot of plans on what that's going to look like and how it's going to become really successful. But once it does, and once we are successful here in Burlington, helping the people of Burlington, we're going to copy and paste and start moving it to other cities across Canada.
Very cool. Very cool. We're looking forward to it. Okay. Last question. Where can our audience find more about you?
Yeah. Instagram is the main source for now. So I think the @ is showing up under my name here, but it's @ Crompton. That's my last name, _elite_REI. That's where you'll find me and some more information about us. And of course, send us a DM and we'll respond.
Cool. Well, there you have it. Thanks for coming on, Charles. And really appreciate it. This is a fun ride. And thanks for sharing all the how you started with all the stocks, real estate, and now the short-term rental. Wish you all the best and hope you're going to hit your goal of 8-figure sooner than later.
Thanks, Cody. Appreciate it. Talk soon.
All the links mentioned in this episode are included in the show notes. And if you love this episode, please leave us a rating and review on Apple iTunes. The link is also included in the show notes. And we would really appreciate your help in spreading the word to more high-income earners on how they too can maximize both their time and money.
Also, if you still haven't joined our High Income Earners Facebook group, you are missing out on High Income Earners community where we help each other reach our own version of FIRE.